The southeastern United States is rapidly developing due to an influx of people who are running from cold winters in the north. The area around Raleigh, North Carolina, is no exception to this rule. When, in the 1970s, Raleigh was a small capital city in North Carolina, and the population expanded drastically in a 40-year time period. This county gets about 100 new people moving in every day, and these people need places to live and infrastructure. And as you all know, infrastructure can create interesting challenges hydrologically and with soil development. The general water processes that are associated with hydrology when you seal the surfaces are well known. You create the increase in impermeable surfaces, which creates this higher velocity of discharge to your streams and waterways, and greater levels of runoff. And this causes a larger impairment to your water quality. Soils plays a really critical role in infiltration for most areas of the country, but in this area of the southeast, they're especially important. These soil properties determine the capacity for stormwater infiltration. And in this region of the country, with the clay subsurface layer that's underneath them, when you develop, you scrape off the surface soils, and this clay is practically like impermeable pavement. So it's really important that we take into account how soils and development impact our stormwater. We want to be able to make sure our pre- and post-development conditions are the same, and we want to make sure that our water features, parking lots, and housing structures have minimal impact on the quality of our water resources. So our stormwater management decisions that we make must consider our existing soil properties and how they will be altered by development. So the goal of this research is to provide a means to represent soil's capacity for infiltration. We want to be able to adapt this so we can account for different development scenarios. We also want to be able to map this infiltration index scenario for the southeast area so we can create these decision support tools that are critically important to hand to developers so we minimize our water quality impacts. So the first step in this process is to use our soil physics knowledge to develop a quantitative index to represent infiltration. There are a bunch of physical parameters that are critical for how soil infiltrates water. And we hypothesize that our surface infiltration rate in the southeast will vary as a function of surface horizon thickness and the subsurface hydraulic conductivity. That means if you have a shallow surface, the water will get to that subsurface layer and pool up and run off quicker. So we use a model, Hydrus 1D. It's a numerical model used to model soil hydrology. And it is a very powerful tool that allows you to look at, in our case, a simple two-layer soil profile and model a five-year storm event in the software. And from this output from Hydrus, we developed an infiltration index. It's a fairly simplistic index. It's just the amount of rainwater that went in divided by the total storm depth. We chose it to do it this way because that gives us a value between 0 and 1. And this makes it easier for scientists and developers to be able to compare and contrast different sites. Hydrus needs soil properties to determine water flow. So we assembled this large database of over 750 different horizons from the Piedmont region of the southeast, stretching from Virginia all the way down in Alabama. These properties that we focused on were physical in nature, including texture, bulk density, water retention characteristics, and saturated hydraulic conductivity data. We put this all into the Hydrus model, and we considered varying combinations of soil surface and subsurface horizons and hydraulic properties. We did this for 135 different profiles. These simulations both represented conditions that were more natural compared to those that were altered by development. Now, we all know things about models, and models can be very powerful tools. And Hydrus gives us flexibility to represent a wide range of soil conditions. However, we need to be able to verify the models that we're doing. So we need to test our models to see if they're realistic. So laboratory tests are currently underway, and they're aimed specifically at validating the effects of different layer thicknesses on infiltration index potential. Now, this is no small column. It's 50 centimeters tall, 25 centimeters wide, and in the side of the column, we have installed soil moisture measuring equipment at three different depths. We can then take this data and turn it back to Hydrus and verify that our Hydrus model is representing a realistic type condition. So, in conclusion of our first part here, the numerical simulations can provide a quantitative index to represent our infiltration capacity, and the validation process of our index is still underway. Now, to address the second part, which has to do with the modeling, how do we bridge this knowledge of our infiltration index with mapping? And we can do this using the soil survey data. We know the surface textures and subsurface textures given in the survey, and I can go through and calculate the average infiltration index, which is a value from 0 to 1, and give a general range of hydraulic characteristics for the region. So this is just a representative sample of some of the more common soil types of the region. The surface texture of a clay loam and a subsurface texture of a clay, so when you have a clay loam over a clay, it can infiltrate about 11% of the rainfall, varying between 2 and 20% depending on the texture and the quality. And in this region, as you can see, the increased amount of clay content does indeed cause a decrease in the infiltration as the clay content increases. So we love this infiltration index that we created, but the soil survey map was done in the 1970s, which naturally occurred before most of the population influx came to Raleigh. It's an older survey, and it doesn't reflect our current conditions, and if you try to extrapolate hydrologic data, do hydrologic modeling, you can end up with data that just isn't representative of the true conditions that are going on. So we did a case study of an area near the Centennial campus in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we created our infiltration index data. So back in the 1960s, 1970s, this was an area that was actually a farm for the local mental hospital. Later, the university bought the land and turned it into their brain mecca. There's a lot of partnerships with university and industries, and it's a lot of development that has happened. And most of the campus transitioned into more light urban development from field conditions. So to model hydrology, we need to know a couple of different important factors, including maps that we've created. So I've created the 1970 infiltration index through the modeling I previously discussed. I have land use, and I have topography. I also have the 2013 land use and topography. But there is no way to address the change that's happened in soils quite yet. So we had to address this. Back in the 1960s, this is what the infiltration looked like based on the soil survey data. As you can see, the dark blue areas that we have are areas that have a low infiltration index, meaning almost everything that gets rained on runs off. The blue areas are about in the middle, or the light blue areas are in the middle, and that white area that you see along the middle of the screen is the lake and the lake, the area surrounding the lake, the floodplain. And these floodplains do have a high ability to infiltrate. We also needed to reconstruct the elevation data, because hydrologic models without elevation don't really tell us much of anything, because everything is flat. And you can see that there's a huge difference between 1968 and 2013, especially when we're looking over at this region right here, which is where most of the development happened on campus. We had a lot of cutting and a lot of filling. And to compare, we based our change in infiltration index on a change in topography. So we took the 1968 data minus the 2013 data to determine an elevation index change. However, none of the buildings, none of the features, the lake was a different shape, and the datum was different for digitization, so we couldn't do that, so we had to use 2001 as a substitute. But, as you can see here from this map, there's been a drastic change in elevation. The dark blue areas here have filled material up to 35 feet. That is a lot of fill material coming in and out. And the same thing occurs with the dark red material. It dropped, the elevation was cut out up to 30 feet. Interesting fact, I bet you're noticing that the lake has what appears to be fill material. And no, they did not fill in the lake. That back in the 1990s, the late 1990s, a hurricane hit and broke the dam. So when they took this data, there was actually no lake at the time for 2001. So then we can look at the changes in infiltration index, and we can use the subsurface horizon data to mimic cutting and filling, the cutting and filling that was done. So if you had a change in elevation up to negative 35 feet to negative 15 feet, we assumed 27% infiltration because that was what the average for the sea horizons were. If you had a change from 1 foot to 35 feet, we assumed 35% infiltration because that is the average value of fill material that I was able to find. If the change was negative 1 to 1 foot, we didn't assume that we used the 1970s index. So this change in infiltration drastically creates a different map, which is more reflective of what really probably is going on in the situation. And I know you're dying to see these two side by side. See how the changes occur. So you can see here that the map on the right has a much, much more blue, which indicates to us that we had a much lower infiltration of rainfall. And in 1968, 53% of the rainfall infiltrated, and in 2013, 41% of the data, or the rainfall, infiltrated. So we are inputting all of this data that we have collected from our infiltration indexes, as well as our change in land use, and we're putting these into an overland flow function in a GIS software. We can add our infiltration index, topography, and land use to create these discharge maps. And these discharge maps can tell us how fast our water flow has been changed between 1968 and 2013. Now, the one major thing that I know when I was doing this data is in 1968, the channels were very wide and very distinct, and the meters per second was very fast in the channels. compared to 2013, in which the hydrology of this site became much more fragmented. It didn't go into directly into riverways, which went directly into the lake, which went directly into the rivers. So in 2013, it was broken up and it moved around in places that they built, in places like the artificial wetland that they built here, the pond that they built, as well as the construction ponds on the site, and the golf course. So what can we learn about studying the hydrology between the two sites? The average runoff in 2013 is actually half that as in 1968 per 10-foot by 10-foot cell. However, more cells in 2013 have runoff, and the runoff these intensity cells have is higher. But the runoff is caught in areas designated for capture. So this area of the Centennial campus, they put a lot of work into green development and making sure that we had a minimum impact on the environment. And this case study can serve as an example for developers that they can actually reduce the amount of sediment and discharge going directly into the streams by using smart development methods in practice. So we are allowed to use the soil's natural characteristics to target development and features. The infiltration index in this region of the country is controlled by the hydraulic properties and the subsurface horizons, and we have a range of infiltration index values that can be used to simulate development. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much.
Or everyone's confused.
Yeah, I noticed in your simulations that if you assume that you had less than a foot of fill or cut, that there's no change. Have you looked at any concept, you know, if you're building a house, they may scrape 6 inches off the whole lot. How much impact do you think that might have on
so the part of this research that I did not actually get to tell you about was the regression analysis that we are designing to do a site-specific index. So we have the hydraulic data and we're putting it together, and we have a regression equation that if we had the site-specific information available, I could tell you what pre-development conditions are. And as a developer, you could tell me that you were going to do this, and I could run a quick hydraulic simulation of the site using both this software, and it doesn't take very long at all, and I can give you a estimate of what it's going to be if you just scrape 6 inches off globally. We do have different depths also simulated as part of this regression equation. So I didn't get into that. I wanted to show more of the global aspects of the project, but we do have that as a component of the project.
Okay, so we have to move on. Thank you again.